What's up, No Nation? It's the guys from Plant the Spear. Excited to be back with you for another episode to talk about some Florida State football today. Michael, there's been some preseason expectations that have been put out, some win-loss totals that I can't wait to dig into because some of these I don't find fault with. Some of these, they belong in the trash can.
Absolutely.
So, you know, along with Miami. But that, because, that, you know, that's going to be a subject that comes up with the polls. You're going to see one of these things is not like the other. If you remember that, that's kind of where we're going to get at with some of these polls. Excited to talk about the few little topics that we got today. Of course, the combine announcement has come out. That's what we're going to lead off with. But before we get into that, Michael, how are you, my friend? Thank you for joining me for another episode.
Oh, Jesse, thanks for having me again. Love being a part of this place and doing real good. You know, it's the off season, man. And so it's just like you're just scratching for info. You're digging everywhere. You're looking in the crevices of every Florida State site, including here, right here at Plant the Spear. You know, I'm looking at my own stuff like, what do I got? What information can we share? Like, it's just that's the terrible part about the off season, man. It just gets the information stops flowing. You don't get as much updates on the team. So you're just mining everywhere, man. So but, you know, hey, we get what we get and we'll share what we can share.
Exactly. Spring is coming up, so that'll give us a little something to talk about. Outside of football, it is opening day for baseball today.
That's so right. Let's go.
They take on Butler. That's exciting to get baseball going under year two of Link Jarrett. Also, softball had a little rocky start, lost the first game against Charlotte, but they've bounced back five straight since.
Yeah.
They just knocked off a top 10 Stanford team yesterday in the Clearwater Invitational. So make sure to check them out. We've been ramping up our round ball coverage here on the website. So make sure you check out those articles as well. But Michael, you know what everybody's here for.
That's right.
We're just going to dive into football. So to start with, let's talk about the NFL combine invites for Florida State. Let's put the list up on the screen
Man,
for those watching on YouTube. And for those listening on the podcast, I will read them off for you. So Florida State this season has 12 invites to the combine, the third most in 2024, and behind Michigan and Washington, who were obviously playing for the national championship.
Right.
So you get Jaheim Bell, Trey Benson, Tatum Bethune, Keon Coleman, Kalen DeLoach, Braden Fisk, Jerrion Jones, Renardo Green, Fabian Lovett, Jordan Travis, which is nice to see. I don't know how much he'll be able to participate, but he'll be there.
He'll be there.
Jared Verse, and then, of course, Johnny Wilson. So, you know, this is an impressive list. And the things that I want to talk about with this list is, one, I think that it speaks to that 2023 team and how top to bottom talented they were. You know, with the whole conversation of Jordan Travis and the snub and when he got injured and all that stuff, it really felt like everybody's like, okay, look, you got Jordan Travis. He's what made that team go. This team was way deeper than that. There was talent across the board. You know, you look back at, first off, that's 12 out of, you know, you could have more next year that could go if you have some of the guys that were on the 2023 team that declare. So, you know, I'm not saying that this is going to be like 2013 where you had literally every player, the starting 22.
Every starter,
They all ended up on an NFL roster. But, I mean, you look at some of these guys, they may not all get drafted. Some may go as undrafted free agents, but you could very well have a wide majority of that 2023 roster end up on as NFL player. And to me, that just speaks to the talent that they have. Some of these guys really made a big impact on their draft stock through the Senior Bowl activities, especially Braden Fisk. That's the one that stands out more than anybody. But I think Jerrion Jones and Fabian Lovett, all those guys had one too. So now they get to go to the combine and showcase their skill set there. There is some guys that did declare that are not invited to the combine, but they will have the pro day at FSU. So, you know, they have that opportunity as well. And then, like we mentioned, I just want to touch on one thing that I saw on social media the other day, and it was Jordan Travis during his rehab. He's getting to where he's starting to get some motion in that leg without the brace on. So, you know, I don't know how much he'll be able to participate. Maybe he can throw a little bit or at least do some team interviews. Yeah. You know, obviously we're pulling for that guy to find his way on the NFL roster. But yeah, man, I think it's just impressive to see how many guys you had end up on this list. I mean, you had more than some significant players out there. You had more than, you know, now I know Georgia didn't have a lot of veteran players, but you had more than Georgia, more than Texas, more than Alabama, more than Oregon. You know, a lot of these teams that were up there, you know, in the rankings and stuff with you. So I'll let you share some thoughts on this, but I think it's exciting for these guys.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. Listen, I have no doubt, and I'm not saying this because I'm a homer. I am a homer as far as Florida State. So I always believe more in our players than probably other teams, player fans of other teams do. But I have no doubt that by the time the ball is kicked off on the first game of the season, that all 12 of those players that are going to the combine will be on an NFL roster. They are NFL caliber players. They may not be immediate starters. They may not be, second string, but they're definitely, there are some that are, all of them are worthy of an NFL roster spot. And I believe they will be on that roster spot. I also believe that, man, players like Fisk and Green and Jones, like, help their draft stock by at least one round in the Senior Bowl. I mean, gosh, the way Fisk was just dominating. And if you saw some of the images coming out of practices for Senior Bowl, if you saw the Senior Bowl, I mean, even at one point they had to recruit him to the other team.
Right.
So that he could, like, he was just that good. I mean, I'm not saying that Fisk is a first round draft product, but he's definitely in the top three or four rounds. And
oh, yeah.
I'd be shocked if he falls below the third round. And I think too, in my opinion, this is just my opinion. I know we're going to do a whole episode on the drafts coming up here soon, but I think right now, just based on what I've seen right now, I think you have one surefire first rounder and maybe a fringe first rounder. The surefire is Jared Verse. We know he's going the first round. Yep. It's always been that way. The second one, which is what I would say is a fringe first rounder, means if he's going to go in the first round, he's going to be in that 20 to 32 range or early second round, like real early, is Keon Coleman. I just, gosh darn it, that boy, I wish he had one more season for Florida State. But, you know, I see two top first rounders for sure. And the last thing I'll say about this is, man, yeah, it was so cool that Jordan Travis, what an honor that the NFL did by giving him an invite to the combine. Because, you know, if he stays healthy, he's probably getting that invite because he's probably playing in the Senior Bowl or something like that. Right. And, you know, does he have an NFL future? Sure. I don't know, you know, what it's going to look like. I don't know how the injury is going to progress. I don't know if it's Jordan Travis, you better put your money where he's going to try to make a team. Yeah. And I believe that when the ball's kicked off, he will be on a team. It may be a practice squad, but he's going to be on an NFL team when the season kicks off next season.
Right. And I think a lot of that has to do with the work ethic, his intelligence, his teammate mentality. You know, he can give you some looks, especially when you look at the dynamic of some of the quarterbacks in the league now with a Lamar Jackson Jalen Hurts and all them. Like you mentioned, even as a scout team guy, I mean, you'd like to see him at least end up in a backup role, but he can give you looks that can be hard to replicate.
Oh, yeah.
You know, or you could at least have some packages drawn up for him because, you know, he's an elite scrambler.
That's right.
And so, yeah, it's nice to see that. He was at the Senior Bowl, or at least the Shrine Bowl. He did get to go hang out there. Again, he couldn't participate in much. But I agree, man. I think you have a couple of guys here who have really pushed their way up into the early rounds. Now, you know, NFL has a lot to do with needs. Yep. Also, you can be one of the best at your position. It doesn't mean that the teams are drafting you in that order. So,
correct.
You know, but I think the most exciting thing is, you know, the draft in the past years is kind of like, all right, let me see where Jamie Robinson went.
Yep.
And I'm done.
Yep.
But like this year, now you have a reason to watch all three days. Like you have to tune in to everything. And so I think that's going to be the exciting part going forward, is just seeing these guys secure their future, making it into the NFL, you know, pursuing and following through with their dreams. And on the backside of that, this is going to pay off big in recruiting going forward.
Yeah.
I mean, this is really the one thing that they have kind of lacked as this staff and at Florida State really since the end of the Jimbo era, was putting players in the league.
Yep.
You know, I think this is another reason why you saw a lot of the Alabama stuff, where it's like everybody thought Alabama just wouldn't miss a step. People went there for Nick Saban because they know he can put you in the league.
That's
right. And so now it's not quite as lock and key that they're going to be getting everybody.
That's right.
And so I think what's exciting about that is if you can show now that we can be a pipeline to the NFL, and I think next year you're going to have a good bit of guys that could go as well.
Yeah.
That's what happens when you start bringing in all these blue chip players, especially from the portal. You can now show that you can be a pipeline to the NFL. I think that's going to help with your high school, and it's also going to help in the transfer portal, because look at how many of these guys, when you put the list back up there, I mean, you got, you know, a lot of these guys came in as transfers. And if they're able to elevate their stock enough to end up in the NFL, I mean, outside of making you, you know, a top level college player, you are now putting guys in the NFL from the portal too.
Yep.
So you add the NIL aspect, you add the college aspect, and you add the NFL aspect. I mean, there's no reason why Florida State shouldn't be a transfer destination.
Absolutely. And not even just transfers, but you look at that list, there's at least two, I think, Ricardo Green was a recruit for Florida State.
Yep.
And so was Kalen DeLoach. And those guys, I'm not sure. Jaron Jones, was he a transfer?
Yeah, he came from Mississippi State.
That's right. And you're right.
I will say, like, even when you talk about Jordan Travis, he didn't do anything at Louisville.
Yeah.
You get full credit for that. Johnny Wilson, you can't coach 6'7", whatever he weighs. That's right. And all that. You can't coach that. But he was not the player that he was when he arrived at Florida State coming from Arizona State. Braden Fisk, you could also argue. You know, Kalen and Kalen DeLoach, that's a recruit as well. So,
My point is to this is that you look at that. So you look at least those two. And if you want to throw Jordan in there, great. Because when he first got here, all he was a scrambler. That's all. He couldn't even throw the ball very well. And you see the progression of that. And so what this is proving is if you get those guys drafted, not only is, okay, Mike is just a talent transfer portal developer drafter. Okay, great. If I'm not a transfer portal person, I'm not going to get developed. No. Look at that list. Man, right. There are – homegrown players that Mike recruited as freshmen to come in who are now have the chance to be on NFL roster. So if you're a high school prospect out there and you're like, well, can Florida State develop me? Yes, they can. Yeah. They are proving it.
Right. And I think one thing to keep in mind, too, when you look at, okay, well, maybe the counter argument is there's more transfers than there are high school players. Florida State is still elevating that talent pool from the high school level. You look at this class, you know, you look at back to some of the other classes and the guys that are still here. You could pick a couple of guys you thought might make the NFL off of that.
Right.
But you look at the 24 class. I mean, there's a handful of these guys, probably half of that class could be NFL players on Sunday. So as you see the high school recruiting tick upward, that's when you're going to start to see more of the high school players make it to the NFL ranks. It's just a lot of your most talented high school recruits are still young right now. They're going to be getting their opportunities this year and next year. So you'll start to see that trickle down eventually. Yep. But yeah, man, I think it's going to be big for recruiting on both ends of the spectrum, high school and from the portal. Now, one thing that the next subject I want to talk about here is some preseason win totals that come out. And they sound pretty fair. You know, I think there's some that will surprise you, some that... You know, I think you have to remember these are from a gambling standpoint. These aren't necessarily where we feel like they're going to win. It's just they have to try and make money. So they're not going to be as sunshiny as maybe we are. But you know who you don't have to take any risk with, Michael? And that's Alumni Hall FSU.
Let's go.
You can get all the FSU gear that you need through our friends over at Alumni Hall in their new location at 1415 Timber Lane Road in Tallahassee, or you can just order online, have it shipped to your door, nice and easy, or you can even order it online and pick it up in store at alumnihall.com. Navigate over to the FSU page. Make sure you use code SPEAR to get 10% off your entire order, either online or in store. So thank you for supporting those that support us. So for those watching on YouTube, we'll pop up a slide real quick, and for the podcast, I'll read them off. We're going through some 2024 preseason win totals here. I got some from a lot from the ACC, and then some from around the country that we might just find interesting. Now, these come from FanDuel, and we'll start with Florida State at 9.5. Now, we'll just touch on Florida State real quick, and then we'll kind of look at some of the other ones here. But, you know, Michael, when we talk about the win total in 2024 being at 9.5, we were talking about this before the show a little bit. I'm not trying to win money or not lose money like Vegas. If I was just for the sake of putting my own number out there, I think I'm going to go somewhere around 10.5. I think that's a little bit better number. But again, you have to keep in mind Vegas is in a different business than us.
Right.
Now, at the same time, when you look at the odds on that 9.5 number, the odds are worse for, you know, they're better for the over and they're worse for the under. So what that tells us is FanDuel expects them to win 9 games more than they expect them to win 10 games.
Yep.
And so to me, that 9 number is a little bit low. Mm-hmm. I think Florida State is going to be in the 10 to 12 win range, but in the regular season, of course. But I think what's interesting to talk about with this is being objective and not, you know, taking off the garnet gold glasses a little bit here. Now, we're going to put them on and we're going to say why we think this number's kind of not legit either. Maybe a little disrespectful in some polls that we've seen that we're going to talk about in a minute. But why I think this number's semi-fair here. So the first thing I want to say is let's talk about objectively why this number's it's fair. I think it's because you have some unknown coming into 2024. Where on the last episode, we talked about potential versus production. Florida State lost a lot of production. You have a lot of unknown guys, especially at the receiver position. You know, you lost your lead running back. you know that you have some talented guys, but they've never really been the lead back in Florida State's system. You lost your top tight end. You lost a lot of production on defense. So there is a lot of variables there that you need to turn out to be what you think they can be to hit that 10 to 12 win mark. And I just think also when you look at the team talent rankings from last year, now this has not been updated for 2024. Obviously, we know team talent rankings are going to change massively with the portal in nowadays. But you look at, you have Clemson, you have Notre Dame.
Right.
As much as I hate to say it, you have Miami on there, right, who is technically a more talented roster in the composite talent rankings. Florida was too, but I'll be interested to see their 2024 rankings because I think Florida State might be about to pass them with just all the pieces that they've had leaving versus what they brought in. So I don't think that it is unfair to think they could lose to a Clemson, that they could lose to a Notre Dame and maybe one other game. I mean, let's be honest. It's hard to go undefeated. It is. Right. Whether we think they can do it or not, it's hard to go undefeated, especially when you got to go on the road to Notre Dame, on the road Miami. And, you know, Clemson lost a lot too. Notre Dame did lose a lot. And Miami, they bring back a core of their talent. But I don't think this number is really completely out of line here. Now, I think they're going to beat it, and we'll talk about why in a second, but I'll let you share some thoughts on that initial 9.5 number and you know, why you think maybe that number is not completely off base, and then we'll go into why we think that Florida State's going to get the over on that.
Yeah. I think your points are also valid, and here's what I'll add to this, and I'm not a gambler. I don't gamble. You know, I've only done it a few times just as for fun, but I do watch it. I do study it because I think it's so intriguing, so interesting how Vegas works. Now, listen, Vegas isn't Vegas because they lose money. Vegas is Vegas because they make money, right? And they have people who are literally crunching the numbers, who are looking for every tad bit. You know, there's a theory out there that Vegas has a mole in every college football program. It's why they are able to set the over and under, how they know about injuries before everybody else does. Like, I mean, it's just wild, right? So Vegas is not in it to lose money. So these lines that they've put out, they've been studied, they've been meticulated over. And so I imagine that they're looking at, okay, yes, Florida State has gotten in all these great players, but these great players they've brought in from transfer portal are only great in name only because they came from Alabama. They came from this place. They came from that place. But when you look at the production of what those players are bringing, I mean, some of them is little to nothing, but yet they have the talent, they have the potential. But Vegas doesn't make their numbers, they don't make their wagers off of potential. They make their wagers off of data. So this is why I think in that side of the argument, why this number might be fair, because they're looking at it saying, you lost a lot of talent, a lot of production. Sorry, you lost a lot of talent and production, and all you brought in was more talent, not more production. So it's hard for us to make your over under win total more than 9.5 because we don't trust the talent that you brought in because there's no production behind it. So basically what they're saying is we trust you more to win 9 games or less than we do to trust you to win 10. And so I think in that sense, it's fair.
Right. And I will say, like, when you look at Vegas, their favorite team is money. You know, they have no fan alliance to any team or anything that. And I think the other thing, too, like we said, is from a gambling aspect, if you put this number at 10.5, that's a little high. I mean, you're really going to bet on a team to win 11 out of 12 games. That's you know, things happen. Obviously, injuries happen, and that has to be accounted for, too. There could be the possibility of injuries and whatnot. Now, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, Florida State was around 10.5 wins last year. So, and they hammered the over on that. I mean, they hit the over. I know they were right. It was either 9.5 or it was either 10 or 10.5. I know it was double digits, and they were like right up there with LSU, some of the highest teams out there. So they were able to go over. And my point with saying that is Vegas is wrong a lot. You know, they do their best, but they don't always get it right. So I think really, like, this is a fair number. I would just take the over if I were to take the line on that. Now, speaking of taking the over, let's talk a little bit about why I think they can have the over here, why they can hit the over on this 10 wins. One, I think the schedule's very manageable. You know, like we just talked about, you have Florida, Miami, and this is based off last year's numbers and kind of making assumptions knowing what some teams did or did not do in the portal and through roster attrition. But you have Florida, Miami, Clemson, Notre Dame. So you have four teams that are technically more talented than you are.
Yeah.
That leaves eight games that you're more talented in, and you should be able to win those games. Now, what's interesting with that is when you just look at what Mike Norvell has done against the teams. I think he's like 8-2 or 9-2 against teams more talented, and like 19-2 in the last 2 years. This is in the last 2 years against teams that are less talented. So he's shown the ability to put away the teams that are less talented. It's just getting past that hump of beating the better teams. And we know last year they were able to do that.
Right.
So, and of course, they beat LSU in 2022 as well. So I think what's interesting is when you talk about the win totals and why they can hit the over. This is a stat that I brought up on the last show that I want to share here again as well, because I think it really drives this point home. You can lose production, and that's a lot of the reason why when we look at these polls, why I have a problem with some of these polls. You have a lot of teams that lost a lot of stuff that is still very high in the polls. Florida State keeps the same coaching staff, a lot of the same pieces. They just lost some production, mainly on offense and some of their top guys on defense. But they replaced a lot of that in the portal, and yet they find themselves behind a lot of the other teams. So, like, why is that? Because when you look at the portal, I think this is what's most important, is quality of production over quantity of production.
That's right.
Again, tying back to the example I used in the last episode, what would you rather have? 50% of returning production from a team that went 12-0
and
kicked everybody's teeth in, or 100% production from an 0-12 team?
That's right.
I would greatly attend every day and twice on Sundays. I would take the 50% from the 12-0 team.
That's right.
Now, to the stat that I read you on the last show, keep in mind, last year, of the top 10 teams in returning production in 2023, only 50% of them had a better winning percentage the following season. Only 50% of those, 5 out of 10. Of the teams that were ranked top 10 in the transfer portal, 8 out of 10 of them had a better winning percentage the following year, and the ninth one was within one loss of having the same or better winning percentage, and that was UCLA. So when you look at the 247 transfer rankings, right now Florida State is at fourth. They have a top five class with 10 blue chip transfers brought in. So to me, again, it's you've elevated the talent floor. Like we said, it's no dish on the guys going out, but technically, by star ratings, this roster is more talented than it was last year. You just have a little bit of potential that you need to work out. And again, look back at 2022. You had guys like Trey Benson. You had guys Johnny Wilson that came in with little to no production.
That's right.
And they doubled their win total.
That's
so the possibility to do it is there. And, you know, looking back at some of these other win totals, this kind of hammers home what I'm talking about. So you see Florida State here, for those watching on YouTube, Florida State's at the top with 9.5 wins expected this season. Now, Florida State, I don't know where they fall in the spectrum of returning production. I can tell you they lost a lot. They lost 92% of their passing production, 65% of rushing, and 64% of receiving. So they lost a lot. I didn't pay for the ESPN Plus article because, you know, we try not to support ESPN as best we can.
Right.
So I don't know where they rank in this, but I did see that Virginia Tech is the number one team in returning production in 2024, and they are slated to win 7.5 games. That's their over under. So if you're telling me that the number one team in returning production is projected to win less games than a team that basically lost everything, but has rebuilt through the portal. And then you combine that with the stat that I just read off to you. That's why I think they can be over the 9.5 win total, because it's not so much about what you bring back. And don't get me wrong, it matters. It does matter. It does help. It took Florida State from 10 wins to 13. But I think it's more in positional returning production that it matters. Your offensive line, that's key. Well, guess what? Florida State brings back basically everybody.
95% of them.
Right, except for two guys. And I think you've replaced them with probably better prospects when you look at the one from Ferguson from Alabama and the experienced guy you bring in from Florida. Probably, you know, equal to better than Roddick and Demetri Emmanuel. But again, you're talking about having continuity on your offensive line. Quarterback. That's probably a place you like to bring back production.
Yeah.
Well, he didn't produce at Florida State, and this is why the transfer portal era is so different in college football. You brought in a guy with 40 Power 5 starts that put up the same numbers that Jordan Travis put up last year. So your gambles are really at receiver, and I like that they have a deeper, more speed-oriented receiver group this year. You know, we and I'll kick back to you on this, but we even talked about this on the last episode where you look at people are going to say, okay, you lost two really, really good receivers, three really good receivers. Well, Jaheim Bell was there for that game, so I don't want to use him as an example. But when you look at Keon and Johnny, that's going to be hard to replace.
Absolutely.
There's no doubt about it. Well, think back to the Pitt game. This is something we brought up last year, our last episode. Last year, when Jordan Travis did not have his two top receivers, he threw for the most yards. Of the entire season because you spread it out more. So that's now right. You still have Ja'Kai. You still have Kyle Morlock at tight end. You still have all these speedy receivers that you brought in. If Darren Williamson and Poirier can stay healthy,
yep.
You have two veteran guys there. So to me, it's the fact that you've restocked the roster at the important positions. Now, for them to get to that 10 wins or more, I think, one, they got to stay healthy. That's right. Key. And I think they could use a little bit more help on the defensive line and at the linebacker position to get there. You know, but overall, I think they can hit that for those reasons. And I'll let you share some reasons on why you think they can go get the over on that 9.5 win total.
Well, I want to go back to what the two stats you brought up. That 5 out of the 10 top returning production teams only had a winning record last season, right? Is that what you said?
A better winning than the previous season.
Right, so 5 out of 10 of those teams, 5 of the top 10 teams that were production teams that were returning had a better winning record. But 8 out of the 10 who had added the portal had a significant better winning record than last year. And I think that's what matters. Let's go back to 2022. Mike Norvell brings in, you know, Trey Benson. He brings in a couple other defensive backs. He brings in Jared Verse. He brings in a couple other players on the defensive line. Players that, you know, either had low production at, non-Power 5 schools or no production whatsoever. I mean, let's go back to even 21 with Johnny Wilson coming in, who had literally nothing at Arizona. And yet you've seen over and over again that those players, when they come here, there have been very few busts that have come to Florida State from the transfer portal that have been busts. Very few. Like, I can't even name them. That's how very few busts there have been. But there have been more so booms that you see, like, oh, they get here and they produce. I mean, Trey Benson was injured, blown out his ACL, blown out something else on his knee, didn't really play. Mario Cristobal basically tossed him to the side. He comes to Florida State and he's leaving now as one of the best backs in school history. I mean, Keon Coleman, yes, he had a productive time at Michigan State, but man, he wasn't putting up, I mean, before the injuries, he was putting up numbers that he hadn't seen in his entire career. I mean, you keep going. Jordan Travis, look kind of quarterback he come. Look at Jared Verse, who was a decent player at Albany, but then became basically a first-round draft pick at Florida State. Braden Fisk, who was a decent player at some no-name school, and now basically is going to be a top-3 draft pick at Florida State over and over again. So the reason why I think this win total is not fair from the other side of the argument is because it doesn't take into consideration the development that Mike Norvell and that staff, the consistency of that staff over and over again. You look at the climb, it has actually happened. You go from 3-6 in 2020 to 5-7 in 2021 to 10-3 to 13-0, because I don't count the Georgia game. So the 13-0 of the season. I mean, they're continuing to get better. And it makes me believe. Now, listen, I said this to you the other day, Jesse, at Florida State, that the floor, I thought, was 8-4. And I love how you put it. Like, there are four games on that schedule for next year that those teams have better talent than we do. Right. So we have to acknowledge that. That's where, for me, that's why the regular season floor is 8-4, because you got 8 games that you're more talented in. You should go out and win those games.
Right.
Then there's those four toss-ups. But the ceiling to me, the ceiling is 13-0. It literally is, because they've brought back most of their offensive line. And you just only have to think Alex Atkin is more than motivated to improve upon what was supposed to be a really good offensive line last season that really kind of left you a little bit disappointed. You have to think they're going to get better. I mean, they brought in Ferguson from Alabama. They brought in some couple other players that we know is going to be good. And then on the defensive line, yes, they lost Jared Verse. Yes, they lost Fabian Lovett. Yes, they lost Braden Fisk. But man, they're bringing in a couple of dudes who were dogs from Oregon. They're bringing in a couple players who are going to help them get better. And you just only you just have to imagine. We don't even know what Grady Kelly is. Grady Kelly is basically, could be basically Brandon Fisk all over again. Like this kid that we just kind of toss to the side, like, what is that doing? And next you know, we're like, oh my gosh, right? This is why I think that win total, it's unfair from the other side. They brought in better talent than they continue to bring in better talent each and every year. Yes, there is an absence of production. So I understand why if you are an analytic person, you're looking at the numbers, you're like, I can't trust non-production. But Mike Norvell has proven that even with non-production, he gets the most out of the talent. And they have brought in better talent this year. Compositely, ranking-wise, they have brought in better talent. So why not assume that, man, the floor, the over-under could be 10.
Right. And I think that's important what you say is when you talk about their hit rate in the portal. Because I think when you look at the unknown of this roster, and again, this could change a little bit. They could adjust these after spring. So if you feel like that's a good number, you might want to jump on it now. But, you know, I feel like from the unknown aspect, it's deserving, the 9.5. I think from a hit rate in the portal and a development that we've seen from this staff with the players that they brought into the portal, because like you said, you can bring in a player that's pretty good somewhere else, Jermaine Johnson, that's a good example, and turn them into a star. It's disrespectful from that aspect because you're not trusting the history. And this is not like, oh, we think they're good. This is the history. They brought in these guys and they produced and they turned them into NFL caliber players. So I think it is a little bit disrespectful from that aspect, from what they're able to do in the portal. Because like you said, I don't have the numbers of like hits and busts right in front of me, but I'd say it has to be 75 to 80%. I mean, they've
high number.
Right, and most of the guys that were bust were guys early on in the portal that they took a gamble on because they needed bodies.
They just needed bodies.
Right, the ones that they went out and got, especially from other Power 5 schools and a couple not, obviously with Jermaine Johnson and Braden Fisk, those are guys that, again, they've hit on almost every one of them. Yeah. And so, you know, I just think that, again, I think they can go on the over, but I understand the 9.5 from a unproven aspect of a lot of the areas of this team. And, you know, we may change our tune in the spring. You never know. Once we see some things, I want to see how these receivers are on the page with DJ. But I do think as a whole, and, you know, when you look at this roster, it is a little bit more talented. You lost some of your star power, but I think your talented depth is like at the defensive end position. You don't have Jared Verse, but now you have the kid from Oregon State who was a two-time All Pac-12 player. You know, you bring in the Durajai kid from West Virginia, who's just he's a hoss, man. He's like that's a big dude to play defensive end. So like you bring back, you have deeper pieces at some certain positions. Now there's some Marvin you could Jones probably Jr. add.
Yeah,
right. You could add a little bit more depth.
Yes,
but yeah, I definitely think that just from a pure unknown standpoint, 9.5 is fair. I think from trusting the development and the additions through the portal and the hit rate that they've had, it's a little bit disrespectful to what Florida State has been able to show you that they've done in the past. And so, you know, we'll see how it pans out. But I'll kick it back to you on this. But I think what's most important is now that we've gotten to the point where your floor is kind of perpetually that 9 to 10 win area. So at least it's not. At least it's not like in the past where maybe you were worried when you lost this much. It might be a tough year, but I think that's why the last episode that we recorded was literally titled Reload or Rebuild. And we think it's going to be a reload year. And a lot of that has to do with the portal. And you have one of the most adaptive and best utilizing staffs in the portal. So
that's right.
Yeah. Man, I think that's going to make the difference next year.
Absolutely. Like I think you're right. I think from a production standpoint, the win-loss, you know, or the win over and under is deserved. But from trusting the development, from seeing how creative this staff is, from one of the most brilliant offensive minds in the game right now, it's disrespectful. I mean, I'll just give you this last stat that I did some research, and this is based on three. So this is on three's transfer portal ranking. But Florida State was ranked fourth in total transfer portal class. Okay, so Louisville was one, Colorado two, Ole Miss three, Florida State four, and then South Carolina five. Now, of the top five transfer portal classes, okay, this is cumulative. So top five cumulative transfer portal class, Florida State was bringing in the second most talented group of players. Okay, so average player ranking, Florida State was second in behind Ole Miss, okay? Now, if you were just to go on the player ranking that was brought in, not the cumulative, but just the player ranking brought in, Ohio State was number one. And I had to do this because Iowa and I forget what other school was on there, but they only had one player and they had a higher player average. But if with five or more, Ohio State was one with the average player ranking at 87. Texas was two at 86. Oregon was three at 83.9. Notre Dame was four at 83.6, and then Florida State was sixth. Here's the thing, though. If you were to look at why those schools, Ohio State, Texas, Oregon, I think was ranked six or seven totally, Notre Dame, why those schools were ranked much lower than Florida State, is because those schools lost just as much, if not close to, the same amount of talent that they were bringing in. Of the top five, Florida State was ranked fourth in talent loss versus talent brought in, meaning that Florida State actually got rid of bad depth and gained better depth, right? They were top in the, they were one of the top five teams in the country at getting rid of what they would call bad depth and bringing in better depth or better players. So again, this is why I'm saying, like, yes, from a production standpoint, like you said, the ranking or the win loss, the win over under is deserved. But from a talent, from a development, from a history, from knowing this, man, it's very disrespectful because you just have to imagine that the bust boom rate is going to continue. That at least 75 to 80% of the players that we brought in this transfer class is going to make a significant and positive impact on this win total.
Right, and you brought in a lot. So if you get 75% of, I think it's 15 commits, I mean, that's a big difference. That's a big deal. I think a lot of the rankings, too, like you said, you got to filter out. You got to actually dig into the numbers because, you know, that's why Miami has such a high recruiting ranking because they load up on three stars. And then they have, you know, 30,000 commits and only like 10 blue chips. So, like, that's because Florida State, when you look at it, they may not be the highest ranked in the recruiting rankings, but they have the highest blue chip ratio in the state. And so that's impressive from that standpoint. Now, before we move on to the next topic, I just want to run through some of the numbers that I find interesting as far as win totals this year. So, like we mentioned, Florida State sits at 9.5. Miami's at 9.5. Good luck with that. Florida, going to be a tough one. 5.5. That's tough. Honestly, man, if they hit six wins this year, that's probably enough to save Billy's job. I mean, with
that's probably enough to give him an extension. Come on now.
Man, whoever, somebody does not like Florida in the scheduling department. Clemson at 9.5. I think this is interesting, too, when you look at Louisville at 8.5. You got a lot of ACC teams that are kind of hanging out in that area there of 8-9 wins, and we're going to talk about that in a second too. Virginia Tech, I have on here at 7.5 wins. Again, they had the most returning production in the country, I believe, at least on offense they do. Now, some other teams you might find interesting, Michigan at 9.5. That's still a pretty hefty win total. Yeah. Now, of course, you got to look at their schedule.
That's right.
You know, Florida State's schedule probably has a lot to do with it's not the most loaded. But, you know, you're talking about all the turnover that Michigan has and still at 9.5. Now, Ohio State, you just talked about it when you looked at who they brought in, the number one portal class, 10.5 wins. That they're expecting big things. But they really kind of they pushed their chips in on this season going to get some pieces. Texas at 10.5 wins. You know, that's a pretty big number to be your first year in the SEC. But like you were telling me before the show, their schedule this year is not that difficult.
It's not that difficult. Yeah.
Oklahoma at 7.5.
That's might interesting.
That's going to be a tough first year in the SEC for those guys. You know, we'll see because, you know, they had a really bad year under Venables to start with. Then they bounced back last year, had a couple of really kind of head scratching losses. So the SEC, the new neighborhood, might not be as welcoming to them as Texas. But even Georgia at 10.5, I mean, that's a pretty stout number. That's what you would expect. But Georgia's got a little bit of a tougher schedule this year. They get Alabama in the regular season, of course, after Saban's gone, you know, because he's kind of had their number when they play in the regular season and in the SEC championship. But then Alabama, 9.5 wins. I mean, that's a pretty stiff number there when you're talking about just so much turnover and a new era. I mean, it's not like you brought in a coach after a few years. I mean, this is – you know, Saban was there, 15, 14 years and was the key to all their success. You're bringing in new coordinators, new players. How many players did they lose in the portal?
And you got Nick Saban sitting up in the skybox watching your every move.
Exactly. And so that's why I think this is a pretty interesting number here for Alabama. And the reason I bring those up is because the next one, now the next slide we're going to get to, we talked about deserving versus disrespectful. The number that the betting lines I could see being a little deserving. We made our case for why we feel one way or the other. Now this these preseason polls are just disrespectful. Now at the same time, let me tell you guys, we 100% understand these are preseason polls released by one person. These mean nothing. These mean absolutely nothing other than talking points, but it's interesting to talk about. So I'll pop them up on the screen for those watching on YouTube, and we'll talk about them for those listening on the podcast. So the way too early pre-spring top 25, and I think everybody has to couch their rankings with that pre-spring because things change.
That's right.
So across both of these, you have pretty similar at one, you have Georgia, at two, you have Ohio State. Your top five teams, and for those listening on the podcast that can't see the slides, we have one from On3 and one from 247, your two major services out there. You have Texas in the top five in both, Oregon's in the top five in both, Georgia, Ohio State. Those are all understandable when you look at what they've done, what they bring back. Here's where things get a little hairy for me, Michael. Now, you have in On3, Alabama's five, they're six in 247. That's a lot of turnover. Wow. At Alabama to still be ranked number six. Now, some of the other teams, it doesn't really matter where they're at. But you look at like Notre Dame at seven. That's going to be obviously your most important game on the schedule there. They're expecting big things for Notre Dame this year. But you know what? Notre Dame gets ranked unbelievably high every single year because their name is Notre Dame.
Right.
And they usually never finish there.
Correct.
So I don't put too much weight in that. But the couple that really make me scratch my head here, again, is Alabama at five in On3 and six in 247. And then you have now Ole Miss again, they killed it in the portal. I understand why they're up there. But Michigan, they are at eight in On3 and seven in 247 Sports. Again, coaching change, quarterback change, all these changes that they have going on. And yet they're still in the top 10. Now, the most perplexing, the biggest head scratcher here is Miami at 12 in 247. And they're down at 18 in On3. So that's a little better. But when you look at 247 and them coming in at 12th?
12th.
That's crazy, man. And I'll make a few points on that in a second. But Florida State, for those watching home that can't see the slide, they come in at 18th on 247 Sports preseason poll. They are 16th in the On3. They are ahead of Clemson and Miami in On3's poll and Louisville. But they are behind Clemson, Miami, LSU, you know, a lot of teams that they beat last year. LSU lost a Heisman winner at quarterback. They lost Malik Nabers. They have a change at coordinator. So for me, it's like the big takeaway with these polls is how come teams get the benefit of the doubt when it's your name is Alabama, your name is Michigan. You can go through a coaching change. You can get your roster poached. When your coach left, the teams that came in and took your talent, all these things, Miami. And done squat in 20 years.
What?
And for the record, looking at number being at preseason number 12, I looked at the rankings, the final rankings last year, all the way down to number 16 was a 10-win team. Miami's had one 10-win season in 20 years. Why the heck are they being put at number 12? So I guess my point with the polls, why I find them disrespectful, is kind of what we hinted at with the win-loss totals is how come these other teams like Alabama's and Michigan's, they get the benefit of the doubt, but Florida State does not. They went out and they lost a lot, but so did those other teams. But they also went out, and now I understand, I have to say this, I understand that Alabama and Michigan have not had the opportunity to get the full-fledged portal experience because they've been able to poach from other teams that lost their coach, but they haven't been able to really go full-fledged in the portal yet.
Right.
But, I mean, when you're looking at an Alabama and some of these other teams, I mean, none of them are even in the top 10 in the portal. None of them. And so that's, again, they could end up finishing there once they get their shot. But Florida State already has a top five portal class, and that has nothing – that hasn't even accounted for spring yet.
Right.
So if you know Florida State has won 10 games, then 13 games, then they bring in a top five portal class. They have a very manageable schedule. And yet you're putting them behind teams that lost their coach, that lost their quarterback, that lost a lot of their production too. I mean, look at how many people got poached off Alabama's roster.
Yeah.
Look at how many went to the NFL from Michigan. I mean, I think they had, 18 guys or something like that went to the combine. That's half their friggin' team. So it's like, it doesn't make any sense. And then of course, Miami is the, this is one of these things is not like the other.
That's right.
And what I find interesting with that is, would Miami have been 12th had they not have gotten Cam Ward? So I, because I would say no, if you're looking at Jacquerie Brown or good old Puffenberger, you know, taking the reins there, would they have been even top 25? I would think maybe, because, you know, they like to set Miami up for failure every year and put them like
they really do
25, you know, they get them pumped up and then they always kind of fall off. It's just a tradition in Miami. It's probably their greatest tradition program in program history. You know, not meeting expectations, but that, and that's just where they fall. You know, hey, everybody's got different traditions, and you know, at least they keep it consistent in Miami.
They're very consistent about that.
You know, that's a time honored tradition that Miami has going. So, you know, we don't want to see them screw that up. But it's just interesting because you're telling me that Cam Ward, and I understand Miami is a much more talented team than Washington State.
Yep.
But a guy who won 5 games and 7 games at Washington State.
Yeah.
In a not so great Pac-12. No. Last year they were pretty good.
Yeah.
He all of a sudden is worth putting Miami at 12? That seems a bit crazy, but yet you bring in a guy in DJU, and I understand the contrast. We've had this conversation plenty of times about one has a higher ceiling, one probably has a higher floor. One of these guys has won 11 games in an ACC title.
Correct.
One of these guys has never had a better record than 7 wins in a season.
Correct.
So, again, he's that much better than DJU. One player? I mean, maybe that's just the one thing they needed to unlock Miami this year. I don't know. But to me, putting Florida State at 18th and 16th seems a little bit disrespectful.
That's right.
Now, granted, hey, let's go earn it. It is what it is. It doesn't really matter in the preseason rankings. Obviously, with the auto bid, you can win your conference and it doesn't matter because you'll be in the playoffs. But man, it's an interesting talking point about why so many other teams seem to get the benefit of the doubt. And it's like, no one still wants to believe Florida State is for real.
Right.
And so it's interesting, man. It makes for a good talking point, but I think it's very disrespectful to what Mike Norvell and the staff has done at Florida State over the past 2 seasons and in the portal this season.
Yeah. Well, like the thing I keep hearing about with, well, okay, let me just go back here. Those teams, so Brad from 247, gosh, first of all, you make me mad already. I'm still trying to have a good day.
Sorry, Brad. I know it's early. I don't mean to upset you this early in the morning. Just, hey, you know, looking at these polls is better than a cup of coffee because it gets your blood pressure going
that's
already.
That's true. That's so true. I just have a bone to pick with Brad. Brad, come on now, man. Now, you're going to rank Florida State, what was it, 16th or 18th on his?
18th.
Okay. You're going to rank Florida State. Now, on three, you know, I don't like 16, but at least I feel like, I have a bone to pick about Utah. Every year they get the benefit of the doubt, and man, they're just not very good. I don't understand that. Whatever. But, you know, you have us in front of Clemson and Miami. I can take that. But Brad over here at 247 has us behind Miami, behind Clemson, who won. Yes, Florida State beat both of them. Who, yes, too. Clemson still hasn't done anything in the portal. And it's not like they got better at the like high school rankings. I mean, their class was good. It wasn't like this phenomenal class like they're used to getting. And somehow Florida State's supposed to be worse this year than they are, according to your way too early ranking. The problem is that these teams, okay, let's just excuse Miami for a second. I got a bone about that one. But like Clemson, Alabama, they're grading on a – Brad is grading on a different curve than he is. Because basically LSU and Alabama, they can lose all those players. But because they are LSU, Alabama, in the SEC, blah, 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 well – they're just going to naturally be better. It doesn't matter. LSU could have went 0-12 this year, and I guarantee you they'd be in the top 10. Like, could go 0-12 this year, and next year they'll be ranked in the top 5. It's just the way we are SEC brainwashed right now. That's one. Number two, going to Miami. Now, I keep seeing on Twitter – this whole comparison, like, well, you remember when Miami got Derrick King and what Derrick King did? Derrick King was phenomenal, and now Cam Ward is the next coming of Derrick King. Let's pump the brakes real quick. Now, Derrick King came from Houston, and he was playing under Dana Holgorsen, who was the air raid coach. I mean, and he was slinging it all over the place. So His third year at Houston, De'Aaron King threw for 2,982 yards, 36 touchdowns, 6 interceptions. He got hurt the next year, which then he ends up transferring to Miami. He has one great season at Miami. Then the next season, he's done and out and hurt, right? Okay. So he's legit only really played 2 fully good seasons. And yes, he was a great, great person. He beat Florida State in the bowl game and then went to Miami. And then of course he, you know, the 2 years later, and then beat Florida State there during the COVID year. Cam Ward is not that, guys. I'm just telling you right now, that dude has not won more than 7 games. He is turnover prone. I mean, and I'm not just saying like he turns the ball over occasionally. No, the bro likes putting the rock on the ground. He enjoys it more than he enjoys throwing touchdowns. Let's get real about this. And thirdly, and finally to this point, how in the world, because let's just be real. What was that dude, the burger guy's name?
Oh, Puffenberger.
Puffenberger, okay, Puffenberger. Now, let's be real. If Puffenberger was the quarterback going into this season of Brad's way too early top 25, you think he has Miami ranked? No.
Probably
so
not,
you're
no.
telling me that Cam Ward is worth 14. I'm just saying Miami was 26. Okay, I'm being generous. I shouldn't even be that generous. But let's say Miami was 26 going into this, and they get Cam Ward. You're telling me, Jesse, that Cam Ward is 14 positions worthy of Miami being ranked 12th. On the fact that DJU has won way more games at both Pac-12 and ACC level, whereas Cam Ward has at Incarnate Word and at Washington State not won as many games.
Yeah.
Come on now.
I get it. Now, I will say, like, he is a massive step over what they had.
Correct.
So he does give them a big boosted win total. And you also look at that number at 9.5. Their schedule is pretty soft.
Yeah.
So, you know, another Charmin soft schedule this year. They should win 10 games. To me, the biggest thing about looking at these numbers is just the fact that one coaching staff has shown you the ability to win when he inherited Justin Herbert, who was one of the best college quarterbacks around, you know, first round NFL draft pick. Since he's not had him, they have not done great. And you can go back to some other episodes where I've talked about the numbers. I mean, the numbers just aren't great without them. But I think it's also, that's why it's disrespectful also to this coaching staff. Whereas you're looking at a coaching staff who has shown you the ability to kind of do less with, or do more with less. You know, Mike Norvell has not yet had a team talent ranking in the top 15 since he's been at FSU. And he's won 10 games and 13 games and you know, done all these things. But you're talking about another coaching staff here who has had top 15 talent every single year that he's been there.
That's right.
And has not done much with it. So to me, I think it's disrespectful to the coaching staff.
Yeah.
And Florida State's, you know, ability to be able to do the things that they've done with that level of talent. And now they're bringing in more talented players, and you think they're going to be worse than Miami. Like, what coaching have you seen out of Morrill Gables to believe that they deserve to be a top 12 team? Mm. I just don't see it. And
at all.
So, right. And so I think it's a little disrespectful to what this staff has done at Florida State. Now, I will say again, this is way too early. This is pre-spring.
Correct.
We'll see how things are going to go. And to me, as far as just, to talk about Miami, to close it out with them, this is a put up or shut up year for them, guys.
Oh, it is.
Like, if you don't win 10 games, you have a talented roster. You have your quarterback now. It's year 3. If you don't win 10 games, it's a failure, point blank. Yeah. And so I do think that, as far as they're concerned, that 9.5 number is probably about where they need to be. They should win that many. Anything less is a disappointment.
Absolutely.
But I think, again, I think that those polls are disrespectful to Florida State. Now, to close out the episode, the last thing I do want to touch on is, could the ACC be in for a Pac-12 kind of year?
Man.
Could it be like a boom and then bust? Because the conference looks like it's kind of knocking on death's door here. I mean, there's we'll have to track down all the lines of the lawsuit and stuff like that coming up. But from what everybody believes, Florida State's going to be out of here in 2024. Now, they're probably going to play an ACC schedule in 2024, but then 2025, they'll make the jump. You know, they have to August 15th to make the announcement. And once that door is open, you're probably, you know, if FSU kicks that door open, you're going to have a few go with them. And so it sounds like the ACC maybe isn't dead after this year, like the Pac-12 might be, but it's going to look a lot different. It's going to lose the little bit of power in the power conferences aspect that they had, at least in football. So the interesting thing is, though, when you look at these two polls, 247, and I know we just trashed it, but still, it's interesting to at least point out.
Let's correct. We didn't trash 247. We trashed Brad from 247.
Right, right. There are six ACC teams ranked in the 247 poll five in the on three. So you have Florida State, Clemson, Miami, Louisville, NC State, and then Virginia Tech sneaks in at 23rd in the 247 poll. The ACC had a down year last year, but when you look at these teams, I mean, you have Clemson, who was top five talent last year. You know, they didn't do anything in the portal, like you said. They lost a lot of pieces, but they have a talented well to replenish from. So they're still a very talented team. And I think if they can get Cade Klubnik figured out, if they can teach him that the ball belongs with the orange jerseys, not the other jerseys. Like, you know, if you could do that, then they would be decent, because that's really their biggest problem last year was he's just a turnover machine and kind of went rogue on some plays and stuff like that. But if you can get that quarterback situation figured out, Clemson's still a good team.
Yeah.
Florida State, we feel like, is around a 10 to 12 win team. That's another good program there. NC State, I mean, they're consistently about a 9-win team. They have one 10-win season in program history. Last year, you thought was the year they'd do it, fell on their face. So, again, you know, save the hype machine on NC State. That's but they're not terrible. Virginia Tech brings back the most production in college football. Louisville has one of the best transfer portal classes out there. And, you know, as much as you didn't maybe – you saw signs of it at Purdue – man, I'm a believer in Jeff Brohm. He is, I mean, he is making it work. And then, of course, Miami's kind of your wild card here. They should be good. They probably won't, but, you know, they have the chance to be good.
Yep.
But at the same time, you have 5 to 6 teams starting out preseason top 25 in the ACC. I think it could be a big rebound year for this conference.
Yeah.
Now, it may be all for naught, because we may be, you know, kind of, hey, thanks for being good the last year we're here. We're out. Deuces.
Yeah.
But I think it could be almost a Pac-12 kind of year, man, where it's like the conference, the future of the conference is at stake, but 2024 could be a good year if some of these teams, I mean, again, we, you know, look back to what the win-loss totals, FSU 9.5, Miami 9.5, Clemson 9.5, Louisville 8.5, Virginia Tech 7.5. This could be a pretty decent year for the ACC. And, you know, it would have been nice to have that happen last year when you needed the strength of schedule. This year, it doesn't matter so much. But keep in mind, if you don't win the conference, there's still at-large bids.
That's
so
right.
So it could still help get you into the playoffs if you finish like a, say, you know, 11-1 or say you're 10-2 with one ACC loss and say you drop Notre Dame or something like that. But, you know, again, that's not even mentioning you're bringing in a team like SMU, who was, I think, 11 wins last year, even though they're terrible against Power 5. So we'll see how that translates. But you again, man, you have what looks like it could be a decent year for the ACC. Even Pitt, who was terrible last year,
they got to have a back year, right?
That's out of their characteristics. Right. And when I looked at their team preview last year, they lost everybody. From running back, receiver, defense, offense, they lost everybody. So I think it could be a very solid year in the ACC, man.
I mean, well, you think about this. Like, I'm looking at, I mean, if you want to throw NC State in there, because you said, they are a consistent. They're never bad. They're just never good. Yeah.
You know, in a weird way.
In a weird way. Like, they're like, well, you're not bad, but they're not good either. But they consistently win, you know, that 8-9 range. And you know, I hate to even bring this up, but they do have a winning streak against us right now. It's super annoying. But so if you go top six, you got Florida State, Clemson, Louisville, and I should reverse that because basically Louisville was second in the conference last year. So Florida State, Louisville, Clemson, North Carolina, NC State, Miami, top six. If those top six teams are as good as they're projected to be, I mean, Florida State could be the second best conference in the league next year in the college football, because, you know, no one's going to argue with at the SEC, even though, right. And you said something about how ACC had a bad year this year, this past football season. And while overall that may be true, and you got to correct me if I'm wrong here, but I thought that by the end of the season, the ACC had a better win-loss record in non-conference opponents than the SEC, than combined. Than the SEC. I thought that was the case.
No, they did. The reason I say that it wasn't like a good year for them was you kind of have Florida State, which stood out among the rest.
Right. Oh, yeah, for
Clemson
sure.
Clemson was a 9-win team. That wasn't right. Characteristic. And then now I'll say this. Had Louisville not have crapped the bed against Kentucky.
Against Kentucky, gosh.
That really took a lot of sheen off of the ACC. Mm-hmm. It was kind of, oh, well, look at here. You know, your second best team lost to Kentucky. So, like, I just say it wasn't a great year because – you know, Virginia Tech showed signs, but they didn't have a great record.
Right.
Clemson had a little bit of a down year. Yeah, and then Louisville, you know, they had really two just head-scratching losses.
Right, right.
But you saw, again, that was year one under Jeff Brohm. They were building. They were building. And so, you know, and I'll kick it back to you on this, but you had in the final poll last year, you had Florida State was ranked. You have Notre Dame, who's not an ACC team, but they play a lot of, you know, they'll be ranked opponent for a lot of ACC teams. You had Clemson, Louisville, NC State all finished ranked, and then you could toss SMU in there if you wanted to. They didn't play an ACC schedule, and they lost to Boston College. Welcome to the ACC, guys. But, you know, I just think that this year, maybe not like top great, but they could be deeper with more talented teams. I think you have the ability to have more teams finish ranked to where you don't have that just – god awful strength of schedule ranking.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. So and that's what they may have, and again, we're not entirely sure, we have to go back and look at it, but they may have had a better non-conference record than the SEC.
They did.
Overall, it wasn't a very good ACC season outside of Florida State and barely Louisville. But if those top six teams, so FSU, Louisville, Clemson, UNC, Miami and NC State all have good years, then yeah, you're going to see where the ACC actually has, like, I mean, because the Pac-12, which again, it's all so subjective, because I really didn't understand this argument around how the Pac-12 was just so much better in this last year. Like, it was so top heavy. You basically had Washington and Oregon and kind of Utah, but their quarterback was out, so they really kind of faded towards the end. And then a little bit of Arizona. Like, outside of that, like, who else was – I mean, Oregon State was kind of okay. But anyways, my point is that Pac-12 was considered the second-best conference behind the SEC last season. And the SEC didn't even have a great year last year. And so if those top six teams in the ACC can perform how they should – now, Florida State should beat Clemson, should beat North Carolina, should beat Miami, and should beat NC State. I'm going to say that because I think most of them is home. Let me make sure real quick. Yeah, Clemson, North Carolina. And NC State.
We didn't play NC State this year.
Oh, no, we don't. I was looking at the wrong one. So if Florida State can win those games that they got, but those other teams can carry their load like they should, Florida State should have a really good, decent top. I think, in my opinion, it should be almost close to a top 10 ACC championship game. Like, Florida State in the top 10, and maybe whoever is two is right on the cusp of the top 10.
Yep.
That should be a great game, which, of course, you know, will help Florida State all the more to get into the College Football Invitational. So,
exactly. And, you know, people will probably say, well, what about the Big Ten? Well, last year, the Big Ten was very much two teams. It was just Michigan and Ohio State, and Penn State, again, they couldn't beat anybody outside of
Ohio State or Michigan.
They win some games, but then they always kind of falter in the big games. So, I mean, they were picked to be a favorite last year in a lot of polls, but, you know, I'm still in the seat. I don't believe it till I see it with Penn State on the big stage.
Yep.
Now, of course, this year, you know, the ACC might have a good year. They might, and it could look completely different in 2025 when half the members might be gone. But, of course, this year I think the Big Ten is going to probably be maybe your second-best conference just because of the expansion.
Mm.
Now, UCLA starting with a coach. Yeah, we forget about that, man.
It's
really hard to stay up to date on college football. But I think mostly – but now that's also an interesting topic, too, because, yes, they add some talented teams. But you – now, of course, Oregon really is just replacing their quarterback. And they got Dylan Gabriel and another five-star sitting behind them. But UCLA starting over.
Yep.
USC just lost Caleb Williams.
That's right.
You also have Oregon. Again, we're talking about quarterback change. So hopefully, I mean, you would think they would be good. They're not missing too much of a beat. But Washington, that's a program that's starting over.
Yeah.
Michigan, that's a program that's starting over. So really, it's like Ohio State's kind of conference to lose. And then Oregon could be the challenger. But really, outside of that, there's not a lot in the Big Ten.
To go to your point, if there's any year for Penn State to actually try to do something, this right. is the year. This
right.
is the year.
Right. And I think you may look at when we talk about having a good year, I just mean like it's a little deeper because yeah. I think a lot of the times with the ACC, you have, which is typical for any conference, you see right. one or two teams dominate at the top. I mean, what would the SEC be without Alabama up until correct. Recently when Georgia became, you know, correct. Dynasty 2.0. But, you know, you look at Michigan and Ohio State, they've carried the Big Ten forever. You look at Oregon, they've carried the Pac-12 for a long time, and Washington. And it's been the same way with Florida State and Clemson carrying the ACC. But I think the ACC could be a little bit deeper this year. It just might be, a kind of a boom before you pop type of season like the Pac-12 had, where it's like your best year also just happened to be your last year. So it's going to be interesting, man. But again, you know, you talk about, like we said, 5 to 6 teams ranked in the preseason. I think it will... Because a lot of people look at the schedule and say that it's not great for Florida State. And I get it. It's you're probably going to have, you know, I want to say Clemson's going to be ranked, but they start with Georgia. So they yeah. could be handed. It's either going to be really good or really bad for them game one.
That's right.
And so, but you know, you look at this and you may have a couple of ranked teams on your schedule. And like we said, when you're still hunting for the auto bid is there. But if you still have the opportunity, because this is a year unlike any other, whereas if you miss that ACC championship, you're probably like, all right, we're not getting in as an ACC team who's not a Power 5 champion. Hell, we got left out as an ACC Power 5 champion with or being the Power 5 champion. So you can never say. But I think if you know that there's still at-large bids on the table, then this stuff does matter. The quality and the depth of your conference does matter. And I think if it's a better year for the ACC, it's like I talk about all the time, a rising tide lifts all ships. And so if you could have just a more respectable, because what did everybody tell you last year? Who are you playing the ACC?
Right.
I get it. But like if the ACC could have a bounce back and do better this year, I still think we're leaving. I still think we're up out of here.
Oh, peace.
But I think at least in a 1 year window in 2024, it will help your strength of schedule just in case you miss that auto bid for the 12-team playoff. You could still grab an at-large bid. You know, if say you drop Clemson but beat everybody else,
right?
You know, say you lose to Clemson as the ACC champion in the ACC championship game, but you're a one loss, you know, you went undefeated in the regular season, but you beat in a decent conference. It's going to help you out. Your strength of schedule probably won't be all the way down at 55.
Right.
Which is still hilarious that like Miami fans pick on you for that. When it's like, you were one of the numbers that were in that equation. So
that's right.
Thanks for sucking and helping keep us out. I mean, at least, you know, again, honoring that tradition. But yeah, man, I'll kick it to you on any final thoughts on this. But I think, again, I think it could be an interesting year for the ACC.
Well, yeah. I mean, I hope so. I mean, I'll just say this. This is kind of my final thought to that is since 2008, so that's 15 years, if I got my math correct, only 5 non-SEC teams have won a national title. 5 in 15 years. Okay. And only once in those 15 years has a non-SEC team won it back to back, when Florida State won it in 2013, Ohio State won it in 2014, right? That's it. Then it's gone SEC, Clemson, SEC, Clemson, LSU, Bama, Georgia, and now Michigan, right? It'd be nice.
Yeah.
It'd be nice if a non-SEC team won it again. And it'd be nice if that non-SEC team was Florida State. So,
right.
Come on, let's go. Let's get this done.
Yeah, and I think it's certainly on the table. And that's kind of the whole point of this whole show, was really just to look at the preseason expectations and, you know, are they deserving or are they disrespectful? And I think ways that you can objectively look at it from both sides. I think that, you know, again, like we talked about, there's ways that you can see a 9.5 win total being a pretty good bet. And then I also see where it's like it's a little disrespectful to have them ranked at 18th outside the top 15 and all that stuff. So, yeah, it's interesting, man. And I'm, again, keep in mind, these are preseason polls. These are preseason things that don't really mean anything.
Pre-spring.
Pre-spring. This could change everything because with the second portal window coming open in April, you got spring practice coming up. Also, one point that I will make that I said this on the last episode too is I think one of the reasons why the transfer portal is such a game changer on top of just bringing in top talent is all these guys are already on campus working.
That's right.
They are all early enrollees in a sense of high school recruits. So it's not, you know, you could grab some late spring additions and they have the summer to get caught up, but most of these guys will get to go through spring. Yep. So that gives them more time to be on the same page. And so, yeah, I think you could argue both sides of the coin. I think they are deserving in a sense. I think the polls are a little disrespectful. But you know what, man? I love proving them wrong. I love making them eat crow because, you know, again, they were wrong last year. They were wrong the year before.
That's right.
In a lot of senses, and we'll see. And then, you know, of course, I don't have a problem with putting a Miami at 12 because, you know, we got to keep their tradition going of, you know, high hopes and low expectations. So, yeah, man, but that is going to wrap it up for us on this one. So hopefully you guys enjoyed this episode, kind of talking about some football. Keep in mind, again, like we mentioned, baseball opening day today against Butler. So make sure you tune in to watch year two under Link Jarrett.
So Link.
Debuting some new uniforms that look really sharp this year. The all garnet for the Friday's games, which is going to look nice. Of course, you know, the Sunday golds is a tradition as well. And then we wish softball the best of luck going through the rest of the Clearwater Invitational. Yes. A lot of ranked games coming up. I mean, it's going to be a gauntlet, but they started out hot. I mean, they took care of Stanford, who's a good team. So that's exciting to see as well. You know, basketball still sucks, but we're not even talking about them right now. So, you know, hopefully this is a retirement year for Ham. We love you.
We love you, Ham, but time to go. But,
you know, the Ham's gone bad. So I think it's time to take it. Go ahead and just toss the ham.
Ahead, toss it out. Cut off both sides. You're done.
Exactly. The leftovers have reached their limit. So I think that's probably a good place to end on this one. But as always, guys, check out Alumni Hall. Thank you for supporting those that support us. Use code SPEAR to get 10% off your order. And again, thank you guys so much for watching and your support. As always, go Noles. Go Noles.